basement. It's the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bills Wire. It is, for you, Tuesday, or any other day you're listening to this, I don't know. according to the analytics, there's not many of you, and it's spread out over time. But for us, it is Sunday, February 2nd, at 9:08 a.m., special morning edition of the podcast. It's Super Bowl Sunday, boys, and we don't know who won yet. We don't know what's going on in this game. We don't even know. We don't even know who's playing. Wait, we do? No. it's San Francisco versus Kansas City, but we're not going to talk about that game because, as I said, the game hasn't happened yet for us. What we are going to talk about instead is English football. We're going to talk about Canadian hockey, and we're also going to talk about American football with some, you know, some Buffalo Bills talk that we do each and every week. We're going to run down each position group, inspired by an argument that took place in my Twitter mentions yesterday. We're going to look at each position group and deem if it's a position group of need or not. So, joining me to discuss these wonderful topics, first, it's McKenna Middlebrook. McKenna, how are you?
I am doing very well. It's Super Bowl Sunday. It's one of the best days of the year. But I always propose that, you know, tomorrow should be a national holiday. And not to be like that football guy, but just like everyone's just going to be hungover and tired tomorrow, and it's going to affect productivity across the board throughout the entire country. So let's just make, you know, Super Bowl Monday a national holiday so people don't have to go into work or school, you know?
I agree. How do you feel about the idea of putting the Super Bowl on Saturday?
That's the best idea. Like, I mean, I understand that traditionally the Super Bowl is played on a Sunday, but traditions are meant to be broken, so let's just push that baby to a Saturday, and I feel like you might get more viewers, too, because it's a Saturday, and more people are less worried about what they're going to be doing the next day.
True. You wouldn't have the deep dive after halftime. You wouldn't have that a steep decline in ratings, but what we have here is the NFL versus the U.S. government just staring each other down. It's like, one of us is going to have to make a move, but nothing's going to happen. C'est la vie. Also here, it's Justin DeLauro. Dilo, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited for this amazing Super Bowl. Go team in red.
Ah, good one.
Ah, see what I did there.
That was a good one. So, I'll go to you first, Dilo.
Yes.
Not who do you think is going to win. Who, again, okay. On Tuesday this isn't going to matter, but who do you want to win the Super Bowl?
It'll be my big prediction. It's kind of a weird one because I really have no allegiance at all to either team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I always do like the cliche, I want to see a good game, I want to see something that's close. I'm kind of hoping that the Chiefs win because then I'll know it's an offensive kind of exciting game, offensive juggernaut of, you know, Patrick Mahomes running wild and, you know, maybe, you know, Tariq Hill doing something that's, you know, positive on the field again. And, you know, I think it would be, you know, Andy Reid, he has a nice story as well. But then on the flip side, you know, Kyle Shanahan is like this boy guru genius that people can look at and they can plaster on walls and be like, this is a good looking guy. Let's get him in front of the NFL. And,
right, he wears flat-brimmed caps.
Exactly, and he's another offensive guru, and then Jimmy G can come up there. So, I mean, there's a lot of intriguing but odd storylines in this one. But I'll go with the Chiefs on this one.
There are great stories on both sides of the ball.
Yes, yes.
Has there ever been a father-son duo to win a Super Bowl? Or just to win Super Bowls in general?
That's... The Belichicks might technically, because I think there's a Belichick on the Patriots staff. So I mean,
like head coaches.
Head coach?
Like a father won, and then years later, his son as a head coach won one. I can't think of any off the top of my head where it's happened.
Google knew exactly what I was typing in, so that's good.
That's good. Thanks for listening. There's one of our listeners on the Kyle Slinky Variety Hour. Google.
I like it.
I don't... Ooh. He is the son of the farm.
I mean, regardless, no. The Shanahans would be a good story. Jimmy G would be a good story. I'd like to see George Kittle win a Super Bowl just because he's a madman. But then Kansas City, though, Andy Reid. You want to see Andy Reid win one. I want to see LeSean McCoy win one. It'd
Sammy
be cool.
Watkins win one.
Sammy Watkins, he's taking a year off. He's taking a chill year, which is just hilarious.
Hey, do you think he's going to dress?
Sammy Watkins or LeSean?
LeSean.
I don't think Shady's going to dress.
You don't think he's going to dress?
I don't think he is, but he'll get a ring anyway, which, hey, I think he'll probably retire. If he's inactive for the Super Bowl and they win, I think he'll just be like, okay, I'm out of here. Which, hey, that'd be fine. And he's going to retire an Eagle. Who does this guy think he is? Who's this guy?
he's a Bill.
Yeah, I'm obviously joking.
I know. He's a Bill, though.
He is a Bill.
His bust should have a Bill's cap on.
Red blood in his veins. Wouldn't that mean he's a Bill?
What?
It's blue. Isn't the blue in your veins? So it's all blue.
Same point. Same blue point. Blood in his veins.
And then red when it's out. So he's a Bill for life.
Red and blue blood.
Oh my God. Put him on the wall of fame.
In high school. Sorry, this is a tangent. But our football team, their big slogan was bleed blue. And it's like, you got some real issues.
Yikes.
We got some issues here.
It's problematic.
Yeah. But, Andy Reid would be a great story. LeSean McCoy would be a great story. Patrick Mahomes, you say, D'Lo, how it would be, you know, a good thing for the NFL if Kyle Shanahan won because, you know, just plaster him everywhere. I think they're kind of hoping for Patrick Mahomes to win just so they can say, okay, here's our, you know, the face of our league now, and he's got a Super Bowl ring, so... there's great stories all around, and this is the first Super Bowl in a long time where I just don't care. And I feel like that's the thing with a lot of people, is they just don't care. And this may be, you know, a freezing cold take by the time this podcast comes out, but I think this is going to be maybe one of the lower-rated Super Bowls in recent memory, just because New England's not playing. New England, say what you will about New England, people watch New England, either to see them win or see them lose. Everybody's got an opinion on the New England Patriots. Whereas this game, people are just like, oh, okay, I don't care. Whichever would be good. It's fine with me. So I think you are going to see people either tune out quickly or just not watch. But we'll see. It'll still be a highly viewed game, obviously. And I do think it's going to be a good game. I don't think we're looking at a blowout either way. Just with the strength of San Francisco's defense and Kansas City's offense, that'll be a good chess match. And then the other two units, that'll be fine as well. It'll be a good game. McKenna, who do you want to win?
I want the Chiefs to win. We talked about this a little bit last week. I just have, like, I always have an affinity to the AFC team, unless it's New England, you know. Mm-hmm. But I like Patrick Mahomes, former Bill Great.
Yep, Bill's legend.
Bill's legend. I want Andy Reid to win a Super Bowl because he probably doesn't have that many years left coaching. And Kyle Shanahan, he'll get his eventually. So let's get Andy Reid a ring before he retires. And that'll be, and if, like, say, like, he does retire for the season, which I don't think he will. I don't know how long his contract is. But, you know, he ends on top, and that'll just be a great emotional story all throughout, you know, after the game and stuff. So, yeah, I want the Chiefs to win, but again, like, I don't have allegiance to either sides, so
right.
It will be a good game, and that's all I'm really looking forward to, really.
My dogs are barking in the background, so you know this is going to be a good episode, and we got dogs barking in the background. A staple. We just need the transformer to blow now.
and the siren.
And the siren. The siren went off pregame. in the moments before recording the podcast, the siren went off, so we'll see if that happens again. I think it's time for another edition of Premier Rich, hosted by McKenna, the segment that may need a new name in a few weeks. We'll see. But I wouldn't change it anyway. But here to break down the latest in the world of English football It's McKenna. McKenna, what happened this weekend?
Okay, so starting off with our boys, Port Vale. Week 2, they drew 1-1 on the weekend. A thrilling contest where Port Vale took the lead in the second half, but then Salford, their opponent, owned by...
Oh, Salford City.
They are owned by...
Class of 92.
Yeah, owned by the Class of 92, essentially. Thank you. they got a late draw. Exciting matchup, as always, with Port Vale, as we know. Now moving on to the Premier League.
As we know, we've never watched a game.
We just started supporting.
As we know, with our beloved Port Vale.
As we know, it was their most recent transfer that scored their opening goal. So, you know, interesting.
Good
enough.
Signing.
Good bang for your buck. And then around the Premier League, Liverpool won 4-0 against Southampton. Poor Southampton. They're on a bit of a run after getting destroyed 9-0 by Leicester.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that was an awful game. Speaking of Leicester City, they drew 2-2 with Chelsea to start off match day 25, an exciting matchup where Chelsea took the lead. Leicester City fought back to go up 2-1, and then at the dying moments, Chelsea got the draw. And then Manchester United drew 0-0 with Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Oh my God.
it's tough sometimes because it's tough because especially against Wolves, who Manchester United seemingly play 1,000 times this season, it's always so boring. And that's all the games that have been played, all the big ones at least. And Spurs play Man City at 11:30 today, which will probably be that could go either way, honestly. But that's the Premier League this week and all of English football as a whole.
Manchester United, I think it's safe to say, they're now the Dallas Cowboys. They are the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, they're the Dallas Cowboys. I would say so. I think they're probably going to be better quicker, sooner. I don't know if that's whichever word is more correct. Because of their... they've been more successful than the Cowboys. Suck at Dallas. but yeah, it's safe to say that they are the Dallas Cowboys.
I mean, Dallas has no reason, no excuse to ever be bad. They really don't. The Mike McCarthy hire, I don't even know if I love it. I don't know if I like the Mike McCarthy hire. It's just weird decisions. Well, I hope they give Dak $40 million a year. That would be fun. that'd be really fun. They're not going to trade Zeke, but I would not mind Zeke. I would not mind Zeke in Buffalo.
Oh, no. He would hate it here, though, so, you know.
Everyone hates it here. Pro Bowlers hate it here.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? I don't remember. It's not important. But moving on, I do believe, from the world of English soccer, unless there's anything else we have to add.
Spurs, they're two. This is the end of the transfer window. It started January 1st, ended 2 days ago, the 31st of January. The two big signings were Bruno Fernandes for Manchester United, who started against Wolves, looked very good, and then Steven Bergwijn from he was at PSV, who signed for Spurs, and I don't know if the team sheets aren't out for Spurs yet, but I assume he'll probably be on the bench of some sort. He's a very talented winger. Very pacey, has a good shot on him. So, two big signings for two big clubs that desperately need help right now.
Is he Dutch?
Steven Bergwijn, yes, he is.
From the Netherlands, I can't. What even is a Dutch accent?
A Dutch accent, like when they're speaking English, it sort of almost sounds like a light English accent. That's a lot of people in Europe because they learn how to speak like from English people. But like a Dutch accent, it's very monotone. When I was in Amsterdam, I noticed that, but you know, it's not too crazy.
You've been to Amsterdam?
I have been to Amsterdam.
Did you go to that certain district?
I did go to a specific district. Okay, I actually just stumbled upon it. I was like, what is going on here? What's going on? What are all these lights? Oh no.
I want to go home.
Mom, I'm scared.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Have you been to Amsterdam?
I have.
What is going? Why has everyone been to Amsterdam?
Boys, let's go.
Amsterdam. The Bills wire takes on Amsterdam. Let's go.
D'Lo, have you been to that certain district?
Yes, I have.
Oh my god! Please explain this district to me.
It's like a whole new world in the middle of a city. Everything's bright. All the food windows. Is just bright and just there's it's a different world.
I've never been to Amsterdam. I've always wanted to go. The only semi-major European cities I've been to are Berlin, which is beautiful, wonderful city, the best city. And then I went to Barcelona, which is the opposite. Barcelona. Yeah, Barcelona. Barcelona kind of smells. I think that would be my review of Barcelona. Kind of stinky.
What?
In every way. My friend had his watch stolen in Barcelona. Yeah. We were just walking the streets of Barcelona at like 8, 9 o'clock. So not like late, but some guy just walked up to my friend, grabbed his wrist, and started doing like ball moves, like with a soccer ball, but he had no soccer ball. He was just pretending to do ball moves. And he's like, "We're in Barcelona, we play soccer." And my friend's just like, "What are you doing?" Next thing he knew, his watch was gone. So
people do sketchy. Somebody almost did something sketchy like that to me in Rome, outside the Vatican, which was probably not the best spot to try and steal something from somebody. But they, like these people know when they have tourists coming through.
Yeah, they very much know tourists.
But side note, Amsterdam is beautiful though.
Oh yeah, like, it's gorgeous.
Outside of the district, it's stunning.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's one of my it's probably my favorite city that I've been to, as well as St. Petersburg, Russia, which was a great time. But that's a different story and a half.
Would the better question be where haven't you been, McKenna?
I mean, yes and no. I don't know. I've been to a couple places. I haven't been to Asia or Australia yet, which I have been to Asia because I was in Russia, but you know, I was on the European side of it.
You were in Eurasia.
I was in Eurasia. I really want to go to Japan. I really want to go to Australia. But, you know, I'm a poor person right now, so I can't do either of those things.
Hell yeah, dude. Poor people. Cheers. But by the end of 2020, we'll do a live Kyle Selege Variety Hour from Amsterdam. Just have to establish that large Dutch audience, get a Dutch investor who will fly us over there.
Hey, the Bills, don't the Bills have a Dutch player right now? Didn't we sign a kicker from...
Denmark. He's Danish.
They have socialism. Yes, Corey Vedvik. It's really close enough. Close.
I'll go to Denmark.
All right, let's do it.
Let's get a Corey Vedvik, the new official player of the Kyle Selege Variety Hour. We'll try to get him on the pod. We'll become close friends, and then we'll, you know,
travel.
Go to Denmark and hang out. Or when NFL Europa relaunches, whichever happens first. We'll figure out a way to get to Europe. But hey. Speaking of Europe, the Buffalo Sabres played a few games in Europe this year, and they lost just a few of many that they've lost this year. They suck. I think that's probably the simplest way to put it. We talked about them basically throughout the entire football offseason. We would have a Sabres segment on the podcast. But then as football happened, as football grew closer and, you know, the Bills' regular season played out, we had other things to talk about. We really couldn't talk about the Sabres. And for a little bit, it looked like they had it figured out. It looked like Ralph Kruger was a good coach, that Jack Eichel is a heart-caliber player, that the rest of the team just figured it out. At one point, there was a time where they could have been the first team in the league to hit 10 wins this year. I think that's really when it started to unspiral once they hit 9 wins. to be honest, I don't know. How many wins do they even have right now?
Mm-mm.
Not many. Let me look this up. Let me look up Buffalo Sabres record, because it's not going to be pretty. Just moral of the story is they started hot. They're 23-22-7. That's not very good. They're like 10 points out of a playoff spot. But that's after that start where it looked like they had finally figured it out after, what, a decade? It looked like they had finally figured it out and they were on their way back to the playoffs. They just crumbled. Now we're in February and they're 10 points out of a playoff spot, and we have a general manager who has proven to be inept at his job. So to just kind of set the stage for this a little bit, why we're talking about this is there's this huge fan movement, if you will, a big Sabres fan woke movement. We had a caller, not we, just in general. There was a caller named Dwayne who called into WGR 550, official home, official radio home of the Buffalo Sabres, last week to discuss just how this organization has fallen, not even on the ice, but just simple things like buying alumni knockoff jerseys and misspelling their names. Just like ridiculous things that if you even pitch that idea, just say, hey, just tell someone, hey, an NHL team brought their alumni back for a celebratory night and gave them knockoff jerseys and misspelled their names. It's like, what? That is just inept on every level, which it is, and that's a good point. And Dwayne got very passionate on the call. Everyone loved it. There was a fan movement. We are all Dwayne. And because we all are Dwayne, everyone who watched, who has watched a Sabres hockey game over the last 10 years, they are Dwayne. But just, it's really bad. And I'm going to try not to get passionate. I'm going to try not to scream, because there's a trend whenever one rant gets popular, you have a bunch of other people do their own rants to try to capitalize off that popularity. That's not what I want to do here. I just want to have a conversation about how bad this team is. And if I start screaming, I start screaming. I can't help myself with this team anymore. So I'll go to you first, D'Lo. Oh, as boy. Somebody who is a bigger hockey fan than me, who's been watching hockey a lot longer than I have, what's happened?
It's a team that's full of just mismanagement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the choices they've made, the roster they've built, they're not talented enough, they're not deep enough. Jason Botterill just seems like he's in way over his head. It just constantly seems like he doesn't know what to do with these guys. He doesn't know how to make the moves. I mean, we have 10 defensemen and we can't, they just need to flush it all out. They just need to do what the Bills did. Take some hits, clean house, and you know, move out whoever they can. What's probably the most I can't even speak right now because I'm stuttering, because it's just been mind-numbing to watch this team. And it's even more mind-numbing because we came from, whatever, 06-07. We're on the cusp of the Stanley Cup. And then we're down to our 10th defenseman, and then all hell broke loose, and we lost to Carolina. But since Drury and Briere left, it just seems like this team has lacked identity. They've lacked direction. It seems like they've just thrown money at terrible spots. I mean, you go back to even like the Ville Leino signing, where it's like, oh, we need a guy who doesn't play center, but hey, we're going to stick him at center and pay him a lot of money. The development hasn't been there. When Tim Murray was here, he pretty much wanted to win every trade, so he'd trade away every asset that he has to get the best player in the deal, but then those best players didn't end up, you know, playing well for us, so we end up losing out on, you know, Evander Kane, and then we decide, you know what, we're just going to move on from Ryan O'Reilly, which is a train wreck in itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, the team just, the financially, they're a mess because they don't have a lot of movement that they can make within the salary cap. Who's going to score on this team beyond the first line? Nobody, and that's, I mean, horrendous. I mean, they might lose out on Sam Reinhart's in the second year of his deal, you know, that little extension. They're going to have to re-sign him because he's pretty decent with Eichel, but are they going to have that flexibility to do so? I mean, defensively, you don't have a number one defenseman. I mean, truthfully, I know Risto gets beat up on, but I think they've done him dirty a little bit because, and that's right, I use that phrase, because truthfully, I don't think he should have ever been put in that spot. I mean, because he was a top 10 pick, we decided, okay, this guy's going to be our franchise defenseman. But if you realized early on, he couldn't play that role. So you're still searching for a number one defenseman. You kind of hope Dahlin gets there, but you're kind of hoping that Dahlin gets there before Eichel gets pissed off and pulls an Ryan O'Reilly. Because if I'm Jack, I'm like, this is a train wreck. I mean, you know, I'll take my whatever, $10 million a year, but this is a train wreck. Like, if I want to win, I mean, imagine coming in, you're a young kid. I'm just going to keep ranting, and you can cut me off. You can scream at me whenever you want.
Please go for it.
I'm not going to yell. But it's just a traitor. It's like, how do you have this much ineptitude for years and hope that things will change? I mean, this is the same roster from 5 years ago that sucked. And we still have those core components that are still playing massive minutes on this team without moving anybody out. It's not a good situation. And the problem is that there's no like light at the end of the tunnel. It's not like you can look at this team and be like, okay, we see some hope outside of like Dalene and, you know, maybe Lawrence Pilot and Yoki Haru. And, you know, we got some young pieces, but it's like at the same time, all you've given like Sam Reinhart and Jack Eichel is just mediocrity at best. And how do you even want to progress with a franchise if that's all you've seen?
Yeah, and you say there's no light at the end of the tunnel. There was, like, 5 years ago.
Yes.
4 years ago. You look at Eichel, O'Reilly, Kane. This was just a stacked young team that if they kept it all together, it would have turned into a good roster. And they just, they gave up. They gave up on the rebuild. They gave up, or Pegula gave up on Tim Murray and was like, because as you said, he wasn't, Tim Murray wasn't a great general manager, as you said, because he tried to win every trade he took part in, and that kind of handicapped him down the road. But look at that team. Look at Ryan O'Reilly. Look at Evander Kane. Look at Robin Lehner, who turned out to be a Vezina-caliber goalie. Jack Eichel, Sam Reinhart. This was a very good young roster. And you turn it over to Jason Botterill, who you call a cap genius, yet here we are, February 2nd, his team has the third highest cap hit in the league, and there's only one good hockey player on it, which is just incredible. Really good capology there, Jason Botterill. But just going past that, he inherits this roster. Was Evander Kane still on it when he got it? Was that Evander Kane? I think that was Evander Kane's.
It was his final year, right?
It was his. I think he made the Evander Kane trade. I know he made the O'Reilly trade. This is gonna drive me nuts. What, did it go from Murray to Botterill? Was there a GM in between?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Actually, when was Tim Murray fired? We'll have to look this up. See, here's the thing. Like I should clarify. Like, you want to win every trade, obviously. But when you mortgage your future and then the trades
exactly,
that you make,
when you handicap yourself,
yeah, when it doesn't work in the long run. Holy cow, now we've got nothing. We're trying to build up Rochester, which is a good idea. Obviously, you want your, you know, you want your developmental program to be thriving. But at the same time, man, you look at some of these trades. Like, you look at the O'Reilly trade, and O'Reilly got beat up for saying what he did. So we get pissed off when players are honest with what they're saying, because, you know, here he is every night going in and out grinding, and this team is sucky, so he's like, man, I've just lost the passion. So we beat him up for that, but then we want to hear, like, honestly what he's thinking. So, I mean, I don't know. Did he have to trade O'Reilly? A lot of people say yes, but I still don't think... I think if you bring in pieces
didn't.
And you win, you don't have to.
You don't have to trade... Like, Evander Kane... Who did he get for Evander Kane? He... freaking Danny O'Regan? Just, like... And a first-round pick or whatever? I'm gonna... You know, just to try to, because I know I'm going to get flack for this trade, I'm going to bring in Eichel's college line mate so we can get that line back. It's like as though the reason why Jack Eichel was good in college was his line mates. Okay. And then O'Reilly, I mean, seriously, that move is to get not only Ryan O'Reilly, who had lost his love for the game, because he wasn't going to call anyone out. That's just his type of demeanor. He wasn't going to call anyone out. So the only thing he could do is be accountable and place the blame on him. And that ultimately got him sacrificed in the city of Buffalo. Everyone hated him because he said he lost his love of the game. And then he goes to the World Championships or whatever and blows it up. So, hey, he regained his love of the game there. So you should have brought him back to Buffalo. But, like... In that move, not only are you getting O'Reilly out, but you're trying to get out of that contract. So what do? You inherit more money? You end up taking on salary in the deal to get rid of a future Conn Smythe winning center? My voice is cracking. Why is that even a possibility? What is the idea behind that? Yeah, I'm going to take on salary to move the best player in the trade. What kind of thinking is that? That's inept, backwards thinking. And you get Sobotka out of that deal, who sucks. I think he's injured, but he sucks. Patrick Berglund, who left, and he sucked. Tage Thompson, who was just...
bad.
He
mismanaged. There's no reason he should have been up here.
Again, mismanaged. Yeah, he should not have been up here last year. This year, probably should have been up here. And he goes to Rochester, comes back up, and gets injured, which... just it's so bad. And then the first round pick, which ended up being the 31st in the draft,
yeah.
And you get a defenseman who is the same as the defenseman you took the year before in the second round, same ceiling, same projection. It's just And why do you need so many? Why do you need so many defensemen? You have 10 NHL defensemen. You're playing Zach Bogosian on the fourth line. You're scratching Colin Miller, who you gave up a second round or third round pick for in the offseason. It's just so inept on every single level of management. And it's so frustrating because we're literally seeing Jack Eichel this year. I don't know if there's a hockey player better in the world right now than Jack Eichel, and that's saying a lot. I'm not saying he's the best. I guess I am saying he's the best because I'm saying there's none better. He's just been incredible this year. And it's like we're seeing this sick social experiment, or this experiment that you would see a YouTuber do on NHL 20. What if I put the best hockey player in the world on a team of 40 overalls? That's what we're seeing right now, is Jack Eichel surrounded by inept players who don't know what they're doing. And Jack Eichel is trying. He is trying to put this team on his back and take them to the playoffs. And it's not working because we have a general manager who's literally refusing to do his job. He is just revolting and refusing to do his job and bring in players around him. And don't say he made a trade for Michael Frolik, because that does not count as a move. That does not count as a move when this team has scoring woes and have so many defensemen and your answer is Michael Frolik. There's so many examples of that. This team, offense has had the problem. Offense has been the problem. He brings in Jeff Skinner, yes. That was obviously a good move. But then, like, since then, Jimmy Vesey, that's going to answer your offensive problems. Marcus Johansson, that's going to answer your offensive problems. Like, no. It is just, like I said, you have a GM who is, like, openly revolting and not doing his job. He is not surrounding the best hockey player, if not in the world, at least the best hockey player perhaps Buffalo has ever seen. You can say Gilbert Perreault, but I wasn't alive for Gilbert Perreault. So for me, Jack Eichel is the best hockey player I have ever seen in a Sabres uniform. This is the best single season I have ever seen from a Buffalo Sabre. And we have a general manager who was just refusing to do his job and is refusing to surround him with players. And I don't even know who you can go out and get. But just, like, trade a defenseman. Just package stuff. I'm tired of this team being bad. I'm tired of this team just looking to the draft and trying to build up that farm system, because they've been trying to build up the farm system for 10 years, and here we are with a mediocre farm system 10 years down the road. Just at some point, just make moves. Try to get good players. I don't care about the farm anymore. And you say build up Rochester, D'Lo. That's been the MO here for 3 years at this point. Is, oh, we're trying to build up Rochester. I don't care about Rochester. I care about Buffalo. I want Buffalo to do well. I don't care if Rochester goes 0-82 every year. Just, obviously, that's exaggeration. Obviously, you want good players coming up on the farm. You want reliable players who can come up. But also, when you're calling up, who was the guy they just called up? The Grinder. You build up Rochester, and you end up calling up guys like that. Again, mismanagement. Jason Botterill just doesn't know what he's doing. As you said, he is so in over his head. And it goes back to what I said, the whole capologist thing. He's a cap genius. Why is his team just sniffing the salary cap, so close to the salary cap, a few pennies off, and you have one good hockey player? You've only won 20-something games entering February. Like, just come on. It is so bad here. Jason Botterill is so in over his head. He has no idea what he's doing. And D'Lo, please take this.
It's just been rugged. I mean, it goes back to years ago when they first hired Tim Murray, and even before that when Pat LaFontaine came on, and then all of a sudden he disappeared. And now, God knows what that, you know, there's like 97 million different stories about what happened there. But this team just is not cohesive in any way, shape, or form in the front office. And it shows with how the team is organized and developed and what they put on the ice every night. And, you know, you look at what Sean McDermott's done. You look at what Brandon Beanham's done. They move in lockstep. Mm-hmm. And they've been able to say, this is our philosophy, this is what we're going to do. They haven't deviated. They've put their head down and said, we're going to work through this. stuff's going to get a little dodgy. You know, you look at even that first season in when they were together in 17. I mean, there were some games that were rough, but they kind of stuck to the plan. They stuck to their guns, and they said, this is what we're going to work with. And ultimately, the two of them being on the same page were able to get players that worked for McDermott, worked in the system, were a strong part of the organization. The Sabres just, for the last 10 years, have been throwing darts at people, hoping for the best. Oh, you know what? We got to sign somebody big. Let's take a swing at Christian Ehrhoff. You know, we got to sign somebody, you know, oh, well, you know, Kyle Okposo is the best player available in free agency, and he's a good player, but Kyle Okposo away from John Tavares isn't going to be a $6 million player, which is what we have, and we have a player who's just in the middle of his contract, the middle of a seven-year contract. They just haven't made intelligent decisions, and it's just, it's going to take even longer to, like, unwind this whole thing and make them, you know, a relevant team again, because, I mean, how is this team cohesive? How do you look beyond the first line and think, okay, this team is good enough? You traded your number two center, and he won a Conn Smythe and a Stanley Cup and whatever, but you traded him because you thought Casey Mittelstadt would be able to fill that void, and you were grossly incorrect with it. It's not even in the ballpark.
Yeah, it's not even in the ballpark.
I don't know. I'm trying really hard not to yell. So.
No, it's unacceptable. It's just truly unacceptable. In a league that promotes parity, like the NHL, there is so much parity in the NHL. You can, I mean, look at St. Louis last year. You can suck in January and win the cup in May. Seriously, this league promotes parity. You're supposed to just be able to turn it around. And in a league where literally you are in the minority if you miss the playoffs, more than half the teams make the playoffs. Is that still the case, right?
That is correct. 16 out of 31.
Yeah, but half the teams make the, more than half the teams make the playoffs, and you can't make the playoffs for 9 years? What are you doing? Just, it is so bad. And I thought about what I was going to say during this segment, because I've been thinking about this segment for days now, because it's just years of frustration coming out. But, like, people on Twitter and just, you know, social media in general, are kind of pointing back to Pegula and saying that the Pegulas care more about the Bills than they do the Sabres, which could be true. But my original point was going to be, if the Pegulas were more involved, what do you want them to do? What do you think they're doing at the Bills Stadium? Terry Pegula is not there every day. Kim Pegula is not there every day. They're not necessarily there every day that involved in the organization. I'm sure on that front, they do the same for the Bills as they do for the Sabres. Like, throughout my entire, again, humble brag, I was an intern for the Buffalo Bills. I saw Terry Pegula twice. I saw Kim Pegula a handful of times. That's not to say they weren't there, but just days that I saw them, they were very few and far between. But just as I listened to Dwayne's phone call, it's like, there's no accountability, and I think that's ultimately the underlying factor here, is they gave alumni knockoff jerseys. This is all stuff that Dwayne said, and he said it very well. They gave alumni knockoff jerseys. They misspelt alumni names. The arena is literally falling apart, and we don't have the ownership saying anything. They're just not even acknowledging that this is happening. And that's unacceptable. I just want something. I'm not even saying I want heads. I don't want heads to fall or, you know, roll here. I don't want Jason Botterill to be fired right now. Or actually, maybe I do. But just, like, I just want something. I want them to show that they care. I want them to show that they know that this is unacceptable. That's what's been going on for 9 years is not what should happen. That they are, it's abnormal that they have been this bad for this long. Just like, Terry Pegula's owned the team for 9 years. The only time they made the playoffs is when he only owned the team for 20 games out of the season. It's just, and they lost in 7 games. It's just like, I remember I went to that final home game. I went to that final home game in that playoff series. I think they could have won the series, and they lost. Then they went back to Philly and lost again. If I do remember correctly, that's what happened. I think the game went to overtime as well. I don't remember. My memory is not that great. But, like, if you could tell like middle school aged Kyle, or I think I was in middle school, if you would have told him, hey, this is the last Sabres playoff game, you're going to be in college, you're going to be finishing college, and the Sabres will still not have made the playoffs, I would have been like, oh my God, this is bad. This is going to be a real bad decade. And it was. But just, it is, D'Lo, anything to wrap up here before we get into the Bills?
It's just not good enough. It's a bad situation, and unfortunately, it's what happens when you have a series of hires that don't work out. And you know, the guy who's supposed to be righting the ship, Botrel, I just think I don't know what he's waiting for. I don't know what he's looking for. I don't know what this team's going to do, because once again, you fire Botrel, right? You say, you know, he's been in Napa for 3 years. We're going to move on from him. That, you know what this is almost like? This is like paralleling the Bills from the first 15 years of this millennium, where you just, you try and get something going, nothing works. You got to move something. Because could you imagine Botrel doing this for another 5 years? I mean, it's a rough situation. They've missed the boat constantly, and it's unfortunate, because you have such a passionate fan base that will do anything for those Sabres, whatever that building is going on, you know, at KeyBank, they'll be there, and it's horrendous right now. You want to keep people from selling their tickets to Toronto Maple Leaf fans? Put on the ice a team that's going
to
win.
Yeah, give them a reason not to sell the tickets. It's just that's another thing. Stop, Buffalo fans, stop priding yourselves on your passion. That's not going to get you anywhere. Yeah, you can support the team through thick and thin. What incentives does that give the team to get out of the thin? Like, or the thick. I don't even know what the freaking phrase is. But what if you keep supporting the team, if you keep showing up to the games, what incentive do they have to get better if they're just going to keep making money? It's just like, and again, I think we've reached the breaking point for Buffalo fans, which is just, you know, what this whole We Are All Dwayne movement is all about. Excuse me, I have to cough here. But just, I think we've reached the point where fans, you know, they've been tired enough for years. They've been tired enough of the just atrocity that has been the Buffalo Sabres, that they're just reaching the point of not caring. They just don't like hockey anymore. The Sabres have killed their love for hockey, like they did to Ryan O'Reilly. So we're at the point where they just don't care, which is worse than hating or loving. Because when you're at a point where you don't care, you it's hard to reel someone back in. It's hard to get them to care again, which is just, we'll see. We'll see what happens with this team. It's just so bad. And, like, I don't even know where they can go. I don't know where they can go. Do you need a, how do you fix this? Do you need a president of hockey operations? Is that going to fix everything? Is it a new GM? You're going to probably mess up that hire again, because you haven't given me any indication that you can make a good hockey hire. Just, it's so frustrating. I'm almost to the point where, like, make Kruger the president of hockey operations. Make Botrel answer to Kruger. Kruger seems like an old guy who's just in charge. Who's just going to say to Jason Botrel, like, oh, you know, you don't know what you're doing, bud, with a Canadian accent, because he's German-Canadian, right? Is that, I don't even know Kruger's lore. That's how much of a fan I am. But, hey, they're going to release those royal blue jerseys next year, guys.
I just hate when Jason Botrel speaks.
Oh my God, he's a goof. Like, he's such a goof.
He had to, I was watching the Amerks game last night or two nights ago, whenever, and they retired somebody's jersey. I think Dominic Pettis or somebody's jersey was retired, or they acknowledged him, and they did between the periods, they had a recorded segment with Jason Botrel trying to say how, you know, Pettis was his former teammate, and just Botrel speaking was the most awkward, robotic. Mm-hmm. Like, have you ever seen Alex Moffat on Saturday Night Live when he does Mark Zuckerberg?
I don't know,
but he's like, he talks like this, and he goes, and like, that's all I see with Botrel. It's like, I'm pretty sure, like, the wires in his body and his robotic body are not, like, computing, and it's causing, like, you know, misfires in his brain, and it just doesn't look he doesn't look like a gaze that's on Earth right now.
I mean, when he talks, he when he talks to reporters, he kind of comes off as condescending in a way. Just listening to him talk. Like, D'Lo, ask me, like, a mock question, and I'll do what Jason Bottrell does when speaking to the medium. The media.
Jason, so the Sabres are coming off a 2-1 victory last night. They're finally starting to look like things are going a little better right now.
Yeah.
What do you see is going on in the future with this team? Can they turn it around before the trade deadline?
Oh, yeah, we can definitely turn it. Just, you know, stuff like that. Like, he'll interrupt them with yes. Just, like, he will interrupt them with yes. He won't even let them speak. He won't even let them finish a question. Like, you listen to Sean McDermott talk. You listen to Brandon Bean talk. And, again, different sport. But just they carry themselves like professionals. They carry themselves like they know what they're doing. Jason Bottrell, every time he comes out to talk to the media, looks like he just ran a mile. Like, he just looks like he's a deer in headlights. Just... It's just so... Jason Bottrell's not the guy. And Ralph Kruger, he carries himself with that same presence. Phil Housley didn't. And it's just like an eye test. It's just something that you can see.
Well, that's the other thing. Housley was a deer in headlights, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Housley...
Bad hires.
You know who that should be the new GM? Brandon Bean.
I said that in Slack the other
day.
Did
you really?
I didn't say that exactly. I said... Let Brandon Bean be in on the hiring process.
Yes.
Just have Brandon Bean be in on the interviews and see if he just sees that spark.
Or let McDermott, who the hell cares who runs the Sabres right now? It's just...
Again, I mean, and say what you will. I mean, Brandon Bean has an eye for talent. Look at his front office. You have Joe Shane, who got GM buzz this year. You have Dan Morgan, who's... always been looked at as like, oh, he's going to be a GM one day. You have Brian Gain, who was the Houston GM. Just he has an eye for talent. He is building a front office that is going to be a breeding ground for future GM talent. And just the Sabres are not that. You want to avoid the Sabres. You have players who have decent years in Buffalo, who once Buffalo doesn't even want them, they're out of the league. Like Benoit Pouliot, that one year he was in Buffalo. He had a solid year. He hasn't sniffed the NHL since because he had just a solid year in Buffalo. They're like, oh, I'm not touching you with a 10-foot pole. You have players whose careers are literally dying in Buffalo because they are in Buffalo. Tim Murray hasn't had a job since. Phil Housley got a... assistant job in Arizona. People's careers are dying in Buffalo. Just get, like, I think that's a good idea. Is let Brandon Bean be in on the hiring process, just not even for hockey IQ, just to see if he sees that spark in him, which we'll see. Like, As I said, I would not be opposed with Ralph Kruger becoming president of hockey ops and him ultimately, like, bring in a GM to run the day-to-day stuff, but ultimately the guy in charge is Ralph Kruger. I would not be opposed to that whatsoever. So McKenna, any Sabres thoughts here?
My one piece of advice to the Sabres, just move the franchise. Just as I was telling you
guys.
Would
not be opposed.
Move them to Burlington, Vermont, and they could be the Burlington Smoke because weed is legal there. They like hockey in Vermont. It's right close to Canada. You know, let's get this moving. Burlington Smoke. The Sabres are dead. They're a dead franchise. Let's just go all in. Just if the franchise is going to die, let's just kill it right now and get them somewhere new and fresh.
Burlington Smoke, the official NHL franchise of the Kyle Selege Variety Hour. That's another thing. Like, if this was not a hockey team, if this was just, like, a business, it would have folded years ago. It would have gone under years ago with this inept management at every level. Kind of makes me nervous for the Bills. I'm going to be honest. Did they just get really lucky? Did they just did the Pegulas back themselves into a coach who ended up being a good head coach, who was just extremely prepared to be a head coach and just knew exactly what he wanted to do when he got a team, and that ultimately resulted in Bean and everything else? Did they just back themselves into this? It's starting to look like that because Rex Ryan wasn't a good hire. All their Sabres hires haven't been good hires. It's starting to look like they just got really lucky with McDermott and Bean, and we'll see if that even pans out. But... is it time to get to the main segment? 48 minutes in.
Should we talk about Bills?
Yeah, I think we should probably talk about Bills. So today, what we're going to do, in hopefully just 10 to 20 minutes. We're going to look through the position groups and determine whether or not that position is a position of need entering this offseason. So I think that's pretty, straightforward. That's simple enough, I think. So, looking at the quarterback room, we're going to start with the quarterback room. Entering next year, they have Josh Allen, they have Matt Barkley, and they have Davis Webb. McKenna, is this a position group of need entering the offseason?
Not particularly, but I think they need a better backup quarterback. Get a draft someone in like the seventh round if anyone's available, or pick up, you know, an undrafted free agent, or...
And they're going to be better than Barkley?
Yeah, because we watched Matt Barkley play, didn't we? He was awful. He had one decent game against the Jets two seasons ago now, you know, and then he played against the Jets this season. He was a bum. He's a bum. He's done. But he's good in the – he was good,
playing with bums.
I mean, still.
He was playing with Duke Williams.
Hey, that's true. but still, he, like, even then, like, he just doesn't look good, and he's that, you know, 2005 to 2008 sort of mold of a quarterback where they just drop back and they throw it to a spot. They can't really maneuver on the pocket that well. They don't have any sort of, I guess, awareness in a sense. They don't have any of that mobility, which is, like, you need for, like, a modern NFL quarterback. So get someone youngin' who can, I guess, learn behind Josh Allen or learn with
Matt. Like a Tyree Jackson.
Yes, but good. Not bad.
Don't give up
on him immediately. Like, I feel like Tyree Jackson would have been a fine third quarterback. Like, why is Davis Webb in there? You know, like, you know what I mean?
Well, Tyree Jackson was not an NFL quarterback. I thought he was very bad in the preseason. But just, I have seen that sentiment on hashtag Bills Twitter. I can't even talk. That whole Sabres rant really got me good. Yeah, it got me going. But I have seen that sentiment that they need an upgrade at backup quarterback. I don't know.
I mean, it's not the biggest need, but I think...
Yeah, like, I think Matt Barkley's fine.
But, I mean, like, if Josh Allen goes down in a situation where they need to win, I'd rather have, I don't know, someone better than Matt Barkley in there.
I'd rather have John Brown in there.
Oh, that's true.
That would not be bad.
Two for two now? Two touchdowns?
Yep.
Perfect quarterback
two
rating.
Two tutters. Yeah, that's very good quarterback rating. I don't see them... I don't think it's a need. I don't think quarterback's a need. I honestly don't see them bringing in someone to directly compete with Matt Barkley. Like you said, maybe they'll bring in like an undrafted guy. I don't see them drafting a quarterback. Maybe they'll bring in an undrafted guy. Maybe they'll bring in Chad Kelly. I think they'll bring in somebody to compete with like Davis Webb maybe. And then if he's good enough, he'll compete with Matt Barkley. But I don't see them bringing in someone to directly compete with Matt Barkley. So, D'Lo, anything to add here?
No, I mean, Barkley's got one more year on his contract. And, you know, the whole goal is that we hopefully won't see him because Allen will stay on the field for the majority of the snaps.
Exactly. Let him live. Let Matt Barkley live. Let him get his money. Going to the running back room, if I can find it here. So far, thus far, on this team, they have Devin Singletary, T.J. Yeldon, Patrick DeMarco, and pending free agents Frank Gore and Sonoris Perry. I'm going to take the lead here because this lets me talk about my my Twitter fight yesterday.
Oh, here we go.
I do think running back is a need. It wasn't even a Twitter fight. It was just a Twitter debate. So, yesterday, Saturday, beautiful day, very hungover, had one too many Friday beers. So, Nick Wotan publishes a mock draft, that dueling mock drafts that he and I had written over the week. And I had, in the first round, I did the mock draft under the assumption that the five best receivers are gone by the time the Bills go on the clock at 22. That Judy, CeeDee Lamb, Henry Ruggs, Laviska Shenault, and T. Higgins are gone when the Bills go on the clock at 22, which could realistically happen, especially given the teams picking ahead of the Bills, Jacksonville and Philly, I think, are 20 and 21. They both need wide receivers. And if three are gone, which could realistically happen, if three are gone by 19 or by 20, you run the risk of not being able to draft one of those upper tier guys. So, like I said, I did the mock draft under the assumption that does happen, and they don't have a top wide receiver to pick from. And so I mocked Jonathan Taylor, the running back out of Wisconsin, to the Bills. This was not a popular pick amongst Bills fans. So in the article, again, I'm just jumping all over the place here. I do not have an issue with somebody disagreeing with my football opinions. I don't have an issue with that. I don't have an issue with someone tweeting me to tell me they disagree and why they disagree, because that breeds a good conversation. That that brings a good dialogue. We can actually converse. We can work off that. That's good. What irritates me to no end is when I purposefully just pick apart a specific argument in the article, and then somebody shows up in my Twitter mentions and makes that argument that I disproved in the article. It's like, you obviously did not read what I wrote. Why do you feel the need to comment on it? Why do you feel the need to argue with it if you know my counter argument? Just stuff like that. So in the article I wrote, I ran down why Jonathan Taylor is good. He has elite vision, good power, good speed. He can be a workhorse in the NFL. And I said, obviously, wide receiver is a bigger need for this team, but bringing in a guy like Jonathan Taylor could unintentionally address that positional hole. Because with Jonathan Taylor and Devin Singletary, you have a good complementary young backfield that becomes the backbone of your offense. You become like exotic smash mouth. You run the ball with Jonathan Taylor up the middle. You get Devin Singletary the ball in open space. You can let Josh Allen run the ball. And then this inadvertently opens up passing lanes when you decide to go play action. That will benefit the receivers. When you have a good running game, that will benefit the passing game. So I have somebody in my mentions saying, they don't need a running back. They need wide receivers. It's just like, I just wrote about why this would help the wide receivers. Just, it would work. And then I had Astro, Dean from, I think he's from the Bills Mafia blog, right? He's followed me for Twitter on years. Very much appreciate him. Good guy. And he said how he definitely wouldn't want a running back with 17 career fumbles. So this sparked a conversation where I said, considering he ran the ball 300 times each year, I'm not overly concerned with 17 career fumbles. Certainly a lot, but with his volume, I can forgive it a bit more. So then he responded, Jonathan Taylor and Eno Benjamin were second in fumbles by a running back this year. Add in Taylor's, he rewrote Jonathan, add in Jonathan's 16% drop rate, and it's a no for me in round one. So then I wrote back what I thought was a well-reasoned rebuttal. I said, that's perfectly fine. I see where you're coming from. I don't love him as a pass catcher either. But 17 fumbles on 926 career carries is roughly one every 54 snaps. Spread that out over a 16-game season, assuming he gets 17 carries per game, that's only 5 per year. Certainly not ideal, but that's the same number as Derrick Henry had last year, one more than Alvin Kamara, and this is assuming he actually gets 5 fumbles. So, basically what I said was, yeah, 17 fumbles is a lot, but he had 1,000 carries. Spread that out, that's only one every 54 carries. Put that in an NFL season, that's league average to slightly above league average. Ball security is not a concern. when you spread it out and it's going to be league average, you cannot use ball security as a concern as to why we shouldn't pick, or as why the Bills shouldn't pick Jonathan Taylor. And again, I don't, this is just addressing the semi-controversy that my mock draft stirred, which wasn't a controversy at all. But I don't necessarily think Jonathan Taylor would be the best pick in round one. But if all the wide receivers are gone, you need offense. You need an offensive playmaker. That's what this team needs. I think they're pretty sound everywhere else. They need offensive playmakers. So if you can't get a top-level wide receiver, you need a running back. You need somebody to complement Singletary and make that the backbone of your offense, which, again, will inadvertently help the passing game. And then that was another thing. I had Jalen Reagor mocked in the second round. And in the article, I wrote that he's 5'11", but he plays bigger than 5'11". He goes up and gets jump balls. He's not necessarily physical, but he's a red zone threat. He's somebody who he plays well when he's in the air, when he goes up and gets the ball. Right. And somebody responded, why do people keep mocking sub-6-foot wide receivers to the Bills? It's like, if you read the article or if you watched the film, you would know that he doesn't play like a 5'11" wide receiver. And I'm sure these people, who they would be ecstatic if you mocked Justin Jefferson to the Bills, because he's 6'3", despite the fact that he doesn't play like a 6'3" wide receiver. I don't know if I ever saw him jump to catch a ball, but it's all about height. It's not about intangibles. It's not about height, weight, 40 time, whatever. That's only part of it. You need to watch the film. So yeah, to go back to this, running back is a need. Yeah. You need someone who's going to complement Devin Singletary, whether that's Jonathan Taylor, another highly touted running back, or a free agent. So McKenna, is running back a need?
Yes. I think you can go – yeah. It's a must need because I think Frank Gore is going to be gone unless he wants to resign or, more appropriately, re-sign with Buffalo. I think the Bills need a running back. I don't like TJ Yeldon. I like him. We were talking about this earlier. I'm back and forth with TJ Yeldon. I really don't know where I stand on him. Some days I'm a big fan. Some days I'm just like, take him or leave him. And then there's Sonoris Perry, who will be a special team player. So he's not right. He'll get a touch if the Bills are either up by 40 points, which is looking unlikely, or down by 40 points, which again is looking unlikely. So you need a better running back in the backfield to complement Devin Singletary because he is a dynamic playmaker, but I feel like you're putting too much of a load on him in a second season where he wasn't necessarily the main guy all throughout the season. He probably was a main guy, back half of the season, maybe even a little less than that. So get someone else in there who can carry the load as well, whether it be through D-Lo. Draft or free agency.
Oh. That's
it. Yeah, we'll bring in somebody to complement Singletary. It's a need. I don't think it's as high priority as a first round pick, possibly, but we're gonna find somebody to go with Singletary.
Was it your burner in my mentions then?
That was all me.
Were you coming at me?
Coming at you hard.
Wow.
Wide receivers. Yep. They have Cole Beasley, John Brown, Robert Foster, Isaiah McKenzie, Andre Roberts, and Duke Williams. I don't know if wide receiver is a need.
Oh my God.
They need a number one target. Not even a number one target, because in this offense, I don't think there is such a thing as a number one target, because it's seriously going to be Josh Allen. If you're open, Josh Allen's going to try to get you the ball. If not, he's going to run. Josh Allen is the number one target of this offense. But
he just throws the ball up in the air and runs after it. And,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he does need a big body. Not even big bodied. He needs a go up and get it receiver. Or he needs a LaVisca Chenault. Or he needs someone who... Well, that seriously, they can fill... They have this hole. They need this production. They need production from the wide receiver room. And given Josh Allen's play style, you can fill it in a number of ways. You can get him a go-up-and-get-it wide receiver where, you know, he's going to be just throwing it. He's going to be throwing the 50-50 ball and trusting his wide receiver to come down with it. That your T. Higgins, your Jalen Reagors, maybe. Or you can get him a LaVisca Chenault to just get it to him at the line of scrimmage, and he will pick up the yardage however he can because he's just a baller. He's a gamer. Love those two terms.
Very football terms.
But... Yeah, you can fill this hole in a number of ways, but it is a hole. You need a number one, not even a production. You need a number one producer at the wide receiver position. John Brown was good last year. Cole Beasley was good last year. Robert Foster is a free agent. Isaiah McKenzie is a free agent. Exclusive rights, I think, but still, they're free agents. And Andre Roberts is not a good wide receiver, despite the fact that he caught a touchdown in the in the Pro Bowl. He's not a good wide receiver. And Duke Williams, we've spoken plenty about Duke Williams on this podcast. But they need depth there. They do. Or they just need better players so you can push the players down into depth. So you can push the other players down into depth roles. So D'Lo, is wide receiver in need here?
Yes. Okay. Very simple. Yeah, they need a number one. If they could find somebody in the draft, that should be the number one priority. I wouldn't go along lines of free agency just because for a number one, at least for a depth player, yes. Free agency for a number one receiver, no, because usually those guys just their contracts are just ballooned. Mm-hmm. They're just huge. So, I mean, huge. There's, you know, hopefully going to be somebody at the 23rd spot or 22nd spot for the Bills.
Hopefully.
Or the 23rd spot. Who the hell knows? Maybe we'll trade
whichever.
Down.
Yeah.
I think that's a very real possibility, especially if a quarterback, if Jordan Love is still there at 22 and the receivers are gone,
yeah.
I think the Bills are going to trade down. They'll get someone to trade up for Jordan Love or something, or just in general. I would not be surprised if they trade down in this draft. They're not trading up though. They are not going up to get a wide receiver. I very much doubt that. If only it's to like 19 or right. 20. If they only have to give up like a third or a fourth, I could see that. But otherwise, I do not see them trading.
They're gonna trade up to the number four spot
for Jerry Jeudy.
For sure.
Ah! Oh no, it would be for T. Higgins. It'd be for the Clemson
guy.
That's right. Oh, great memories.
Great.
Great memories.
McKenna, wide receiver. Yeah. Do the Bills need him?
Yeah, the Bills do need a wide receiver. Whether it be a LaVisca Chenault or a Chase Claypool, which neither you nor Nick mentioned in your mock drafts, which I
gave him Jalen Reagor.
I was disappointed. Obviously, I'm all about Chase Claypool. I think he's a perfect fit for this offense, and I think he won't be the number one. He'll probably be the number two receiver drafted by Buffalo if they draft a receiver in the first round, which, again, there are two scenarios where a receiver, a top five receiver, is available at 22, or they all go in the, you know, teens, like the mid to late teens, so which could happen. So, yeah, they definitely need one. They just need a guy who can – it's just something different. Who's not?
Yep.
Someone who's not 5 foot five. That I'm, you know, so I'm taller than all of the starting wide receivers for Buffalo.
They only have one wide receiver who's above 6 foot on this roster. So I understand that you want a taller wide receiver, but also when you're in my mentions telling me that Jalen Reagor, who plays like he's 6 foot three and is only 1 inch shorter, or a couple, you know, millimeters shorter than 6 foot, you're gonna tell me they don't need him. Okay, but whatever. Let's move on to the tight end room, because we need to move on to the tight end room. Number one, we have Dawson Knox, then Tyler Croft, then Lee Smith, Tommy Sweeney, and Jason Kroom. Tommy Bahama. I've said on past podcasts that I don't necessarily think that I don't necessarily think tight end is a position of need on this team, but I mean, looking at the Super Bowl, right? George Kittle on San Francisco, Travis Kelce on Kansas City, they have elite tight ends. Having an elite tight end makes your offense much, much better. And now, looking as free agency draws closer, you have those very good tight ends. It looks like they're going to hit the market with Austin Hooper. That's his name, right? Yeah. Austin Hooper? Yep. Austin Hooper. Greg Olsen, who is might be a lock to join the Bills, right, given everything. His Carolina past, he might be a lock to join the Bills. But knowing what a good tight end can do for an offense, not having a good tight end isn't necessarily going to hurt you, but having a good tight end is going to help you exponentially, especially a guy like Josh Allen, who is not afraid to check it down anymore. He's not always looking for the big ball. So giving him a guy like a very good tight end, I was going to just say a specific name, giving him a guy like tight end, giving him a good tight end, who can, you know, help in the short to intermediate game and is also a threat to take the ball, you know, 50 yards, who is also a big play threat, that would very much help a guy like Josh Allen, which I don't know, though. I don't know how they do it. I don't want them to bring in just another middling guy. I don't want them to bring in another Tyler Croft, or, you know, I don't want them to bring in just a mid-tier guy. If they are going to bring in a tight end this year, I want them to go big or go home. Yep. I want it to be Greg Olsen or Austin Hooper, and then you get rid of Tyler Croft. But again, I don't see them doing that. I don't see them giving up on Tyler Croft after a year in which he was injured for the majority of it. I don't see them bringing in an elite tight end when they think they have something in Dawson Knox. They think they can turn Dawson Knox into one of those upper echelon tight ends. So given that, I don't know if tight end is a position of need or not, because it could improve, but also it's not a bad room. If you think you can get that elite tight end production out of Tyler Croft and Dawson Knox, which I'm not sure you can, but they may think they can. So I'll go to you, D'Lo. Just this tight end room's kind of confusing. So is it a position of need or not?
I mean, I don't think they'll make a big move. If they move on from Croft, it would cost them only $1.6 million against the cap. Mm-hmm. So they could if they wanted, but the challenge is, do they think they're going to really find somebody better than Croft? And that's the challenge. You know, if you bring in Austin Hooper, you know, what is that cost going to be?
A lot.
And there's a challenge. You know, you might get, you know, a year out of Greg Olsen, but Greg Olsen's missed a lot of time the last couple of years. I mean, I think it would be great to bring along, you know, Dawson Knox and be a nice little, you know, mentor to him, but at 34 years old and missing some time, I mean, I don't know if, you know, they'll absolutely go for somebody like Olsen, but Olsen would be more ideal than Hooper because Olsen would be like a 1-year deal probably.
Mm-hmm. The Kyle Williams of offense. That's how they would do
it. There it is. He'd be like a 1 year deal type of, you know, type of situation. You know, they're going to bring back Lee Smith because they need another guy to take six holding penalties and pretend to be a sixth offensive lineman.
I don't know. I think they can free up money by cutting Lee Smith.
I thought the Bills could free up money if they cut Croft. I thought they could say like $5 million or something.
Yeah, it's like a 1.6 cap hit, dead cap, but they free up like five.
Yeah, they free up a lot. The yearly cash.
And that's something
you get like
$4 million
for cutting him.
And he likes making that money. And
they have the potential out.
Yeah.
It is a potential out, but this regime strikes me as the type where they're not going to give up on you after, you know, it was circumstances outside of your control that caused you to struggle. I really don't see them cutting Tyler Croft after 1 year in which he was injured. They seem to value players as people, and I think they want to give him that opportunity to prove himself. I don't think they're really going to even consider cutting Tyler Croft after the year that he had. But let's assume for a second they do, and they do bring in not even Austin Hooper. They bring in Greg Olsen. In the event that he goes down or cannot play, do we trust Dawson Knox to be the number one tight end?
Yeah, maybe. We had to this year.
Well, yes, and we're having the tight end conversation.
That's the thing.
See, I don't know. It's going to depend on what the offseason looks like for Knox. I think, you know, do they see enough growth in him that he can be, you know, a true number one target? And that, unfortunately, is like us looking into the crystal ball and trying to figure something out that we won't be able to know. But, I mean, Knox is still fairly new at the position, right?
Yeah, he was a quarterback in high school, converted to tight end in college, but he didn't play that
much. I think we need some type of veteran. I mean, unless Croft comes through and has a horrible offseason or something, or, you know, gets hurt again and misses the season, I don't think this room really changes that much.
I don't think so either. So, again, could it be improved? Yes. Is it a position of need? No. McKenna, anything to add on tight ends here?
I think I'm going to say something controversial. I don't know if it's controversial or not. I think our boy Tommy Bahama might be a better option than Dawson Knox.
He's more well-rounded.
He's very well-rounded. Again, this is preseason, but when he was catching balls from Josh Allen, he didn't struggle with drops. He didn't have a drop with a couple games he played in the regular season, and I think they both have great hair, which is the one thing Buffalo Bills fans really like about them. So there's not much between them. So why not give him a shot? You know, he's young, he's athletic, he has good hands. Why not, instead of having a guy like Greg Olsen come in, who will be a great mentor, but they should promote from within, I guess.
I like Tommy Sweeney. I think he's a solid player. I think he's – I don't think there's really – he's a jack-of-all-trades, master of none. Love that phrase. he's a fine player. I don't know what his ceiling is. Yeah. I don't think he's ever going to be an elite tight end, but just like a second or third tight end.
Right, yeah.
Sure.
I think he's better than Jason Kroom. He's probably better than Tyler Croft, but I think Knox's ceiling is higher.
Oh, you think he's better than Tyler Croft? Yeah,
because he's not going to be injured.
Tyler Croft is a good
tight
end.
Yeah, but he's injured. So how good can he be?
He's injured, but when he plays, he's a fine player.
Caught one touchdown this year, I guess.
There's a lot of players like that just around the league where they're fine players. It's their cap hit that makes them.
And I think this is like the most interesting room, I think, because you can make arguments for both. But again, I could see them making a move and just be like, all right, Tyler Croft, get out of here. We want our money. And we're going to sign a big free agent. But then again, they like them, their players, as people, which is, you know, something you don't see in the NFL too much.
Right. They're honestly, I no do not idea. See them.
I don't know.
I don't see them cutting Tyler Croft. I just don't think it's going to happen, just because it'd be a dick move. It'd be a dick move to give him money. He breaks his foot again. And then you're just like, can't have it.
That's true.
Like, we let you rehab in our facilities all year, but now you're gone. Go get another team. Just like, that's kind of a dick move. But, hey, whatever. It's a business. If they can upgrade, they're going to upgrade. So, we've made the executive decision that we're going to do defense next week. So now, last position group, the offensive line. There's a lot of offensive linemen on this team. They have Mitch Morse, Spencer Long, scrolling. Ike Butker, John Feliciano, Quentin Spain, Ryan Bates, scrolling, Deion Dawkins, Cody Ford, Ty Inseki, and that's the offensive line. D'Lo, could they upgrade?
They could upgrade. I'm still just wondering what their plan is for Quentin Spain. Mm-hmm. You know, that's probably the one. I mean, Feliciano, you know, was signed for at least another year at, I think, four plus, like 4.4 million, something like that. And then he'll be a UFA. So the Bills have to decide, you know, is Spencer Long going to be, you know, a depth guy behind Feliciano, or can they draft somebody behind Feliciano to take over for John in a couple years? Because we're on first name basis. I think Cody Ford and Ty Inseki will be on the right side again. The team's going to have to decide. Also, it feels more like they need to kind of position themselves for a couple of years from now. You know, with Deion Dawkins, who's going to be making some money in a couple of years. If Dawkins is still going to be, if they're really committed him being the left tackle, then they're probably not signing Spain. And then they're bringing in somebody, you know, in the draft who will make rookie money for a few years. So that'll kind of offset a little bit of the, you know, the more signing in the future Dawkins signing. I mean, the line was better this year. It couldn't be really much worse than 2018. But I still think, you know, you're going to want to look at some decent depth guys who can come in. I think Long will go. He's a club option for $4 million a year. And I just, for the limited snaps he played, I think they'll probably let him move along. Dawkins has been adequate at left tackle. Spain's a tough one because he did well in his year here. But I really think if they're going to put in some more money to this offensive line with Dawkins, that they might try and find somebody who will make a few million less than Spain in the long run.
I
don't know. It's a tough line. It's
tough because I do think they need continuity across this line, especially given the growth that you saw from not only the line, but from Josh Allen from 2018 to 2019. I think they'll want to maintain that line. I think they'll want to keep it as close to the same, if not identical. But I don't love Cody Ford at right tackle. I really don't. So I do see a scenario where if you don't want to pay Quentin Spain whatever money he's going to make, which I think he should, but if you don't want to keep Quentin Spain there, I think I do see a scenario where they move Cody Ford in to right guard, move Feliciano over to left guard, and then Inseki plays right tackle, or they bring in a right tackle. There is a scenario where the players that currently on the roster do play next year. They are all starters next year, but it's just in a different, you know, jumbled up fashion, because I don't love Cody Ford at right tackle, but also I don't want to replace Cody Ford at right tackle. I don't just want to bring someone in, re-sign Quentin Spain, and then Cody Ford's on the bench. So I do think you can improve the offensive line. That's basically going to be the underlying thing here, is you can improve it, but you don't necessarily have to. I don't think you're going to bring in any starters. I think, if anything, you're going to bring in depth guys. So that being said, I don't necessarily think it's a position of need that you have to address through either free agency or the draft. I think it's just basically re-sign your own guys, and you're set there. Because I think they should re-sign Quentin Spain and run it back next year. See if Cody Ford grows as a right tackle. So McKenna, offensive line thoughts.
Yeah, it's a tough one again, but they have quality throughout the offensive line, but I think they're going to get rid of some of, like a Ryan Bates, Spencer Long. They're probably going to get rid of them because they're not very good. but yeah, I think, wasn't Cody Ford's deal coming out that he was a better guard than tackle anyway? Am I incorrect?
Yes, people said he could be, like, a very good guard, average tackle. And I think this year it was just kind of, you know, circumstance. Yeah. Feliciano played better than they thought he would. Quentin Spain played better than they thought he would, and they wanted to play Cody Ford.
So, yeah, I think there's this scenario where Ford moves into guard, and I don't know the right tackle situation in free agency or in the draft, to be completely honest, but I wouldn't be upset if the starters return, because it's a pretty decent offensive line. And if you go into, like, advanced stats and metrics and stuff, they're ranked pretty high up in for run blocking, and they're average, I think, at pass blocking, which is far better than the 2018 season. So improvements can be made, but I don't know necessarily how they could be made. That would make the most sense for, like, you know, cat, like, their cap space and personnel.
Right, the long term.
So, yeah, it's a confusing one. So, I think, you know, I think almost all the stars will be back this next season.
I agree. Is that all the offensive positions? I think we ran down all the offensive positions. As I said, we're going to do the defense next week because we're an hour and 20 minutes deep. I did not go as quickly as I wanted to on the offense. So the Sabres rant got a little out of control. So we'll be back next week with the positions of needs on the defense, among other topics, as you always get out here. So I think that pretty much wraps it up for today. Make sure to follow Bills Wire on Twitter at the Bills Wire. Make sure to follow McKenna on Twitter at
McKenna Middle.
Make sure to follow D'Lo, who was muted. Don't know if he can hear. Make sure to follow D'Lo on Twitter at
@JDeLauro.
There he is. Make sure to follow me on Twitter @KyleSalagi. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.